This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Now. Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, helping to solve tomorrow's retirement savings challenge today. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Let's say you had to borrow, I don't know, a couple of trillion dollars to fund, oh, say, the salvation of the U.S. economy. You'd want the value of those dollars to be pretty stable, no? Problem is, the foreign exchange markets have a mind of their own. This was not a good end of the week for the greenback. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Trusted Choice, over 10,000 independent insurance agencies across America committed to treating customers as people, not policies, online at trustedchoice.com. American Public Media presents The Next American Dream. What will it look like? Find out more at nextamericandream.org.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Good to have you here on this Friday, everybody. It is the 22nd of May today. Amid all the economic instability of the past year or so, the dollar is one of the things that has been remarkably solid. Investors decided they could count on its relative safety when everything else was up in the air. This week, though, things started moving the other way. It cost $1.40 to buy 1 euro today. That's a nickel more than you had to pay on Monday. Astronomical change in the world of the foreign exchange markets. And the dollar is on track for its biggest drop in months, as Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reports from New York.
On the bright side, the dollar's tumble could mean investors are more optimistic.
People are more willing to take risk.
David Weiss is chief economist at Standard & Poor's.
The flight to safety that dominated the dollar's strength over the last few months has now gone into reverse. People are going back to more normal behavior.
So that's a good thing, right? Well, Weiss says normal behavior has its ups and downs.
If you're concerned with employment, you want a weak dollar. If you're concerned with inflation and living standards, you want a strong dollar.
So does that mean that we now have to worry about inflation since the dollar's weakening?
Well, we aren't weakening that much. Remember, we're still considerably stronger than we were a year ago.
And worries about inflation are not U.S. dollar specific. Howard Wieldon is senior strategist at BGC Partners in London. He doesn't see any attractive currencies right now.
There's nothing to hang your hat on. There's nothing for anybody to actually grab and say, this currency is the one we should move into.
So if the dollar is weakening, doesn't that mean U.S. goods are cheaper and we can sell more of them overseas? I asked Mark Chandler, author of the forthcoming book, Making Sense of the Dollar.
Some people will say that a weaker dollar will help boost exports, but the real key to helping exports is to have stronger world demand.
And Chandler says world demand is unlikely to pick up unless countries start taking monetary risks, printing money like the U.S. has been doing for months. Of course, some argue it's those very steps that are sending the dollar downward. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Discount shoppers will get another chance to save money this weekend. Memorial Day typically brings some of the best sales of the year. But retailers are practically giving things away already, hoping against hope that price cuts will get shoppers into their stores. So when 70% off is the new normal, what's a merchant to do? We sent Joel Rose to find out.
The sales pitches sound familiar.
There's lots of places to go this Memorial Day, but only one place to go to.
This is the big one, the Nissan 10 event at Tri-State.
But this year, retailers aren't relying on discounts alone to get shoppers into stores.
The price still has to be low, but they are having to go beyond that.
Patricia Edwards is a retail analyst with Storehouse Partners. She says retailers need clever ways to lure shoppers back, and they don't have to slash prices across the board because they've deliberately kept inventories low.
So there'll be planned promotions, but we're not going to see the huge 70% off sales because most retailers don't have that much to clear.
For example, Old Navy will be selling flip-flops for $1 a pair on Saturday. Gap Inc. spokesperson Louise Callagy says it's an ideal way to get the target customer, young moms, into the store.
Our mom can come in and buy them for everybody in her family, but at the same time, she will get to see all the great deals that we have in a lot of our other clothing that she would buy for herself and her family.
One car dealer in Colorado is going to even greater lengths to bring in customers. Weld County Garage will refund the full price of any car purchased this week if it happens to rain on Memorial Day. Warren Yoder is the general manager.
As much as I want it to be nice and warm, I would just as soon at some point in the day we get a big old downpour.
Yoder may get his wish. The forecast calls for scattered thunderstorms and a 50% chance of rain. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
Weather like that is not going to do beach retailers any good. Summer is when vendors that work on the sand earn their take for the whole year, selling trinkets and T-shirts, keychains, and any other engraved thing you may want. We called Perry Pillis to see what the beach business is like during a recession. He owns a beachfront store out in Ocean City, Maryland. Mr. Pillis, good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Do me a favor and just give me a quick description of what it is that you sell.
Sweatshirts, sunglasses, beach hats for men and ladies, footwear, suntan lotion, beach bags, kids' T-shirts and hats, sand toys, just a general variety of beach store.
How's business been so far? You've been open, what, 6 weeks, couple of months?
Yeah, it's been a little soft so far this year.
How soft? I mean, are you seeing people actually coming in and buy stuff? Or?
I'm seeing probably about a 15 to 20% shortfall from last year. It seems like here, junk food seems to be doing pretty good, but clothing is marginal.
So you're selling a lot of Twinkies then?
Yeah.
Up and down the boardwalk there, what are your neighbors and other retailers in the neighborhood? I mean, what are they saying to you?
What we're finding is the junk food are doing good, then the retail soft people are doing not as good, and then the little higher ticket items like old-time photos that might run people $40, $50, $60 a pop or more, they're even off more. So the higher the ticket, softer it is.
Are you expecting this to continue through the summer? I mean, you know, we are in a recession and all.
Yeah, I mean, I see no reason for it to change from the customers that are coming into my establishment, still coming, but just don't have the money, extra money to spend.
What would it take for you to say, you know what, this isn't really worth it, and I'm not going to open up this summer?
Well, it's never been that marginal at the beach. If you enjoy what you're doing like I do, I could have retired a number of years ago, but I enjoy the interaction, the activity, and until it doesn't pay me to come up here and put the time and effort in, then that would be a different story.
Perry Pillis owns a beachfront store called OC Babies in Ocean City, Maryland. Mr. Pillis, thanks a lot for your time.
Pleasure to be with you.
Not much splashing around at all on Wall Street today. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The House Energy and Commerce Committee has passed its big climate change bill. That's going to let U.S. negotiators hold their heads a little bit higher at a global warming meeting in Paris next week. Chinese officials are going to be there, too, and they came in for some praise from the Obama administration's special envoy for climate change yesterday. Todd Stern called Beijing's efforts on cutting greenhouse gas emissions impressive. Commentator and economist Todd Buchholz says the U.S. could stand to follow China's lead in more ways than just one.
Name almost any category and you get China. Tallest man, China. Smallest man, China. Best Chinese food. Well, maybe not that one. But here's a sad comparison. Best fiscal stimulus plan? Yep, China. Caterpillar and DuPont report that China's plans are already generating orders. Meanwhile, Goldman Sachs economists have upgraded their old GDP forecasts. Now, how did China win the stimulus game? Quite simply, our Congress decided to throw money where it wouldn't do much good. Most of the $800 billion is dribbling out to government, health care, and education, sectors where the average unemployment rate is about 4%. Meanwhile, 21% of construction workers sit idle next to their lunch pails, waiting, as do 12% of factory workers. Well, at least the jobless aren't forced to sit in traffic, which won't improve much since only about 6% of the plan went for bridges, tunnels, and freeing up bottlenecks. A majority of China's $587 billion is aimed directly at infrastructure. Why did China get it right? Their leaders have bigger incentives. Our congressmen care mostly about doling out favors. We get a $650,000 study of beaver management in Mississippi. China's leaders face a more serious threat than a re-election campaign. China has 30 million more young men than women. When you have that many frustrated, randy, and jittery young guys on the prowl who can't get a date, well, you better at least give them a job. And China will. China must grow pedal to the metal for the next 15 years. After that, it smacks into the great brick wall of China, its terrible demographics. China won't have enough young people to support its retirees. China will look like the old country, Florida. For now, though, they beat us in the stimulus competition. But, of course, some American firms are doing just fine right here in America. P.F. Chang's, a thoroughly American company, just announced a 33% leap in first quarter profits. A great leap forward.
Todd Buchholz is the author, most recently, of New Ideas from Debt Economists. Take a second to share your thoughts with us. Our website is marketplace.org. Click on that link that says Contact. How much you need this three-day weekend may well depend on which side of the economic fence you're on, the nope, we're not out of it side, or the hey, look how well the stock market's doing side. So before you hop in the car for your Memorial Day getaway, if you're taking one, we offer our weekly wrap of Wall Street and beyond. Joining us for that this week is Lee Gallagher. She's an editor with Fortune Magazine. Andy Brooks is the head of U.S. equity trading at T. Rowe Price. Hello again, guys.
Hi, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
Andy, I'm going to start with you, actually, and I'm going to pull out that old stock market phrase, sell in May and go away. Is that what we're seeing here?
You'd think it might be apropos, but my sense is, you know, the worst is behind us, and it seems to me there's a pretty good chance this market is higher at year-end than it is today. So I'm not sure I would head for the exits quite yet.
Lee, how's your sentiment there?
There's definitely something to be said for things have stabilized. We are definitely not as bad as we were last September, but I think a lot of this rally that we've seen in the past 2 months was based on just pure optimism and just the sense that things were getting less worse. And I think you have to remember that less worse is a lot different from getting better. And there was some optimism that things would start to get better in the second half of the year. Well, the second half starts next week, and I think that we are still bit of a way from seeing some really positive signs that are going to tell us that this is finally all over and the market is going to go up.
Andy, don't you think, though, that we can at least hope for a nice quiet summer, that the stock market will be stable and there frankly won't be much news until the fall?
Well, I think everybody would vote for that. We've really had just an incredibly busy year. And, you know, we've just had a fire hose of equity issuance come at us the last few weeks. And the market's taken it very well. But I think we're tired.
When you say equity issuance, you mean new stock coming on the market, right?
Absolutely. You know, after the stress test, so many of the banks have come to market with significant equity issuance. And these are good offerings for the companies and hopefully good for investors. But, you know, it takes a lot of focus and attention to process this and to try and figure out the valuation metrics.
Valuation metrics is another way of saying price, right? And Lee, let me flip that to you and ask you about the mood of the banks on Wall Street that are issuing a lot of these stocks. I mean, do they think that having passed the stress test and now made it to possibly the doldrums of summer, that they've made it?
You know, I think they definitely have a lot more confidence, and I think they see in the markets that investors have a lot more confidence about the banks, but that could still change. I mean, we still don't know what other toxic assets are still lying on the banks' balance sheets, but, you know, they definitely are riding this flow of optimism for sure.
All right, well, let me rip some things from the headline then, and we'll do an optimism double check, Andy. And the first one would be the serious trouble that the recession has put the state of California in. They're talking about rewriting the state constitution out here because we can't figure out how to manage our money. In the next week or so, General Motors will, odds are, file for bankruptcy. I mean, there are some counterweights to the whole optimism thing, no?
There certainly are, and it's clear that from these kind of headlines you see that there's not a sector of the economy or a state or a municipality or a family that has not been adversely affected in a big way from this economic meltdown we've had. But again, I think, you know, we know this, and I think a lot of this might be priced in. And this is the, you know, the bears talking, if you will. They keep rolling out these headlines and these stories and these reminders of how difficult things have been. And I think the markets sort of have a pretty good understanding of that. Now, to Lee's point, I think she's probably right. I think we're probably a touch premature, and the market's probably somewhat ahead of itself. So this would be a good time for the markets just to back and fill and let us get our sea legs, if you will.
All right. The last question this week is going to be the sensibility question. And, Andy, I think we know where you stand on the general sensibility issue. You're optimistic, and you think it's going to go well. Lee, I go to you and ask you, are we making progress getting through this thing?
We're definitely making progress. The credit markets have stabilized. The pace of unemployment has slowed. There is some truth to the reaction that the markets had in the past 8-10 weeks. But, you know, I think there was also some overreaction. So now I think it's a good sign that the market is sort of getting a reality check and really looking at things as they come out. For example, like the retail sales that were worse than expected. You know, these things are also real. So it's not going to be a fairy tale wrapped in a bow. You know, we start March 9th and go up forever. It's going to be a little bit more complicated than that.
I was so counting on that whole fairy tale bow thing, too.
Wouldn't we love that?
Lee Gallagher at Fortune Magazine, Andy Brooks at T. Rowe Price in Baltimore. Thanks to you both.
Thanks, Kai.
My pleasure. Thanks, Kai.
Coming up, a pricey new standard for public pools.
Each pool is uniquely different in how the plumbing's configured, how the recirculation system is set up.
But first, let's do the numbers. I'm sorry, trading? What trading? It was slow today in advance of the long holiday weekend. The Dow Industrials fell 14 points, a tenth of 1%, finished at 8277. The Nasdaq lost 3 points, also a tenth of 1%, closed at 1692. The S&P 500 dipped less than a point. Yeah, that's about a tenth percent, ended at 887. For the week, the Dow put on a tenth of 1%. The Nasdaq rose 0.7%. The S&P 500 gained about a half percent. Treasuries took a tumble as more U.S. debt sales loom next week from the Treasury Department. The yield on the 10-year note rose to above 3.4% for the first time in 6 months. The real fear is that our mounting debt would threaten the U.S.'s AAA credit rating. Gas prices inched up just in time to hit a 7-month high as people take to the highways this weekend. But hey, gold looked great. Newmont Mining shined up 1% as the metal itself topped $960 an ounce. If you're in despair, you can always go shopping teen retailer Aeropostale. Jetted up more than 3.5% today. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Monsanto, committed to sustainable agriculture, creating hybrid and biotech seeds designed to increase crop yields and conserve natural resources. Produce more, conservemore.com. Miss anything in business news this week? Download our new podcast, After the Bell. Every Friday, Scott Jagow makes sense of the week in business and the economy. Just go to marketplace.org and click on the podcast link.
Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at what's coming up Monday. Events in Washington and around the country mark Memorial Day. Markets are closed. If the idea of a 3-day weekend makes you want to dance, you're not alone. Monday is National Tap Dance Day. And in England, people chase giant cheese. The annual cheese rolling event takes place in Gloucestershire. The winners get cheese. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl. The major television networks wrapped up their big advertising presentations this week, the upfronts they're called, when the networks announce their fall schedules in the hopes of snaring some big money from advertisers up front. Ad buyers will start actually paying for commercial time on those shows in the next couple of weeks, but the pitches from the networks this year haven't just been about the content. They are promising new ways to make the ads stand out. Michael Berge's the editor-in-chief of Media Week magazine. Michael, welcome to the program.
Oh, it's great to be here, Kai.
So I imagine we all know what product placement is. You know, the example that's probably most current is the Coca-Cola cups on the desks of the American Idol judges, right? Sneaking those products in there. But now there's this thing called TV in context. What is that?
I think TV in context is just taking that a little bit farther. As viewers are watching TV through their DVRs and they can skip the commercials, the networks have kind of figured this out, and so therefore they embed the advertiser into the programming and then embed the programming into the advertising. The cable network Bravo is really aggressive at this, where if you're watching Top Chef, you will suddenly see a vignette of some hilarious moment on Top Chef where, you know, someone cuts their finger off or whatever, and they'll show that in the middle of the commercial break. So anyone who's using a DVR and is fast-forwarding through those ads, they think the programming's returned. So they stop, and they watch this little bit of programming, and then suddenly they go back to more ads.
Oh, now, see, that's so funny, because when that happens to me, I just get annoyed.
I think a lot of people get annoyed, but most of them still kind of will watch the ads, you know, just because they don't know how many ads are left. You don't want to go past and too far into the program because then you have to rewind. And
yeah,
so I think it's a pretty clever move to now blur that line even more so that you can't easily skip through the advertising.
How else are those lines being blurred? What are we going to see this fall?
We've got a great example this fall on NBC where Subway has essentially bought its way into the TV program Chuck. Now, a little background, Chuck is a troubled program. It's not getting great ratings. One way to help keep that on air is to help subsidize the cost of the programming by bringing an advertiser in and working that advertiser in. Now, are we going to see a Subway sandwich picking up a gun and shooting at someone? No. But it's going to get worked into the programming where when someone's sitting at their desk eating something, you're going to have that Subway logo very clearly visible.
Does this work? I mean, does it make people go out and buy, you know, the $5 footlong from Subway?
I don't think it works any more or less than advertising has. I mean, you go back to the classic overquoted Joseph Wanamaker quote about, I know half of my advertising works, I don't know which half.
Right.
We still have not answered that question. No one has. But if Subway's numbers go up, then they're going to go, yeah, this advertising kind of worked.
How much money are we talking about here? Last year, I think the figure was $9 billion out of the upfront. Is it going to be that much again?
It really depends on how the networks approach this market. The buying side, those people who are looking to buy that ad time, are telling the networks, you better be reasonable because nobody wants to spend more money than they did last year when the viewership is down and everyone's budgets are a little tighter. And the agencies have plenty of other options to go to, whether it's buying digital inventory, which is less expensive, or going into what we call the spot TV marketplace, which is buying at the TV station level instead of the network level. TV stations are sucking on wind for any kind of revenue they can get. Their pricing has dropped 20, 30, 40%. But I think the networks are going to ultimately have to get more reasonable on their pricing, and we're going to see a network TV marketplace in the upfront that will be below $9 billion. I just can't say how much below it.
Michael Berge's the editor of Media Week. Michael, thanks a lot.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
If the weather cooperates, it's going to be a big weekend for a good number of the 300,000 public swimming pools in this country, Memorial Day being the unofficial start of summer. A lot of those pools, though, will stay empty for at least part of the season. In some places, like Philadelphia, there's just no money to open up this early. In others, though, a new law has pool guys working overtime, as Lisa Napoli explains.
Sean Debley has been staring at a lot of pools filled with workmen instead of water. Debley's a health inspector for Ventura County in Southern California. The reason so many pools are under repair has to do with a new federal safety law. Its goal is to keep young swimmers from being trapped by underwater drains.
You have the potential for body entrapment, fingers and toes getting into openings. So you want to really make sure that the fittings are installed to minimize the potential for entrapment.
The law is called the Virginia Graham Baker Act. It's named after former Secretary of State James Baker's late granddaughter. She's one of nine people who've died over the last decade from the forceful suction of pool or hot tub drains. The law went into effect last December, and now every public pool in the nation has to comply. Health Inspector Sean Debley says there's no easy fix.
each pool is uniquely different in how the plumbing's configured, how the recirculation system is set up. That's been one of the challenges in trying to come into compliance, is that there's not a universal cure.
In some cases, it just means new drain covers. For more complicated fixes, automatic shutoff pumps or new drains have to be installed. That can cost tens of thousands of dollars for a single pool. Tom Lachaki is chief executive of the National Swimming Pool Foundation. He estimates the cost of retrofitting all the public pools in the country could reach $1.5 billion.
For manufacturers, for distributors, for service companies, that's quite a stimulus package. However, for the local pool, they're the ones who are bearing the cost. And as a result, more pools are closing.
Among them, 10 pools in Georgia's parks. The state says it can't afford the $150,000 to make the necessary upgrades, and so they'll keep them shut for the summer. Lachaki says there's no way to know for sure just how many pools across the country have shut down or closed for repairs because there's no central clearinghouse keeping track. Many pool operators weren't even aware of the law until they got notices about it from their insurance companies. Scott Wolfson is with the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which oversees the Baker Act. He says there have been delays in implementation.
We know that there are pool owners and operators out there who are still waiting for the covers to be delivered to them, for labor to be available to install them, that there are some state officials that have a backlog of permits to clear.
Wolfson says so far no one has been fined for non-compliance, but it's believed half of the pools in the country haven't made the retrofits.
The sign is down now.
In Ventura County, Health Inspector Sean Debley signed off on the upgrades made on this pool, and so it will be open just in time for summer. I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, offering absolute return funds with goals designed to match yours. Putnam Investments, a world of investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
Every other Friday at the end of the program, we take a break from the big economic news of the week, and we send Rico Galliano and Brendan Noonan out to ask the Marketplace staff what they would really like to talk about, news that might have escaped notice, something you might like to bring up at a dinner party.
Jeremy Hobson, New York reporter. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, Air New Zealand has come up with the first ever matchmaking flight in the world.
Really? Flying from where to where?
From Los Angeles to Auckland, New Zealand, and singles will be on this flight, and they can mingle and then do whatever comes next.
It doesn't seem like they've thought this one through.
13 hours. What if you get seated next to somebody you don't want to hang out with?
For one thing, and conversely, you know, doing the walk of shame is bad enough. Try doing it on an airplane.
Phyllis Owens, commentary editor at Marketplace. What story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, a lot more Americans are going to be saying, "What's it all about?"
What are you talking about?
Well, a lot of students are going to Canada to go to college.
Why?
Great universities, great campuses, and a whole lot cheaper.
You know, I always thought of Canada as college anyway.
Okay.
Because in Canada, you just, you know, they like beer, they like donuts, and they have free healthcare, and they don't have to worry about the future. And pot's basically legal.
Stacey Vanek-Smith, senior reporter, what story are you going to be talking about this weekend?
Well, the British courts have been wrestling with the question of whether or not Pringles is a potato chip.
Weird. Who cares?
They care because in Britain they charge a tax on potato chips, which would mean that Pringles would owe them a couple $100 million. Pringles is actually saying that they're not a potato chip because they're only actually 42% potato.
By which measure my couch has higher potato content than Pringles.
Don't move it to England.
That is just the briefest taste of Rico and Brendan's podcast. It is called The Dinner Party Download. There's a link on our website. It is called marketplace.org. That is Marketplace this Friday afternoon from American Public Media. Today, the Dow fell 14 points, a tenth of 1%. The NASDAQ lost 3 points, a tenth of 1%. The S&P 500 dipped just under 1 point. Wait for it. Yes, a tenth of 1%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste West, and the executive producer of the program is J.J. Yore. Coming up on our personal finance show, Marketplace Money, this weekend, the president signed that credit card reform law today.
It's been 30 years since the credit card industry was regulated, and it's about time that it happened.
We'll explore what those changes will mean for you, and we will be back on Monday. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.